work?
Yeah, we can do a little work. I feel like I need you now more than ever. Today is 30 years for me.
30 years.
Today's it.
Yeah. Wonderful.
Yeah.
I was 34. I graduated when I was 60. I call it graduated rather than retired.
You retired at 60 years old. That's just 5 years from now. Wow.
But it was a different kind of, the only advice I'd give you is the 60s are really, really good for traveling and doing everything that you ever wanted to do. The 70s, you may get a little present.
Yeah.
And the presents aren't good. Mother Teresa said there are no problems, there's just gifts. Like some of my gifts I don't appreciate.
Yeah, I don't think I would appreciate that gift either.
No, but you're going to get one. And hopefully you're in good shape and you can, and strong, and you'll deal with it. Whether it's cancer or heart or something, diabetes or something. But you want to really take advantage of your 60s. And people just take it for granted that they're always going to feel the way they feel. And you won't, unfortunately. Rob at 77 in Paris was not Rob at 35.
No, I can imagine for anybody.
And when you're with a 47-year-old and a 9-year-old, and you got a 75 and a 77-year-old, and we're marching all over Paris, and then standing for 5.5 hours in the Musée d'Orsay, you know you're 77.
Yeah, I bet. You just want to go lay down somewhere.
Correct.
I know. We had our grandson for the weekend. That's what I wanted to do last night.
Right. You just like, I'm tired, you know? Mm-hmm. You think? Anyway, so that's the only advice. I don't think you should stop working, but I think you should take more time off.
This year I've been away from the office more than I have been in the last 30 years. This year. Now, part of that's been because of my parents, you know.
Right. And part of that is, you know, life showing up, right? Man makes plans and God laughs.
I've heard that.
But you want to make your plans because sometimes he doesn't laugh and lets you get away with it.
He lets you get away with it, right?
Right. So just, you know, life advice. You don't get them back. You don't get the years back. You think, oh, I'm going to get in shape and then I can do all this. And it's harder. You can still be good, but you're not going to be quite as good as you were.
Yeah. You know, and also I think the fact I was on a call with Dennis, a little while ago, and we're talking about how it's just not reciprocal. You take a little time off, the amount of time it takes to get back, like health-wise, you know, exercising, stuff like that, it's just not reciprocal like it used to be.
No.
You know, it's so much harder to get back on track.
Healing takes longer. When you injure yourself.
Yeah, it took me 5 months to heal up from my mountain bike accident that I had last October.
And when you were 30 or 28, it would have taken you 6 weeks.
Yeah, I would have popped right back up and gotten going again. But it didn't work that way.
No.
So I got rid of my mountain bike.
those are tough but decent decisions.
Yeah.
I'm looking at all my hiking equipment that I use to hike all over the world and thinking, I probably am not going to need the extreme weather equipment and this and that, the crampons, and I'm probably not going to need that. And
See, you're the kind of guy that you'd hand it off to the next generation.
Right.
And be like, go enjoy this. Please. Right.
I know. Well, they get better, newer, faster equipment anyway, so who knows? Somebody will like the bamboo rod, I guess.
Yeah, somebody else will use it, and we just go from there. But no, this year has really been probably one of the more challenging years I can remember for me personally. This has been one of the more challenging times for me. Just, I don't know if it's personally, professionally, you know, just getting older, just whatever. I constantly feel like I'm at a crossroads. I have had times in my life though where I've stopped for a while. You know, I just get kind of, I don't know, call it procrastination or the inability to make decisions and, you know, just feeling very reflective. And then all of a sudden I make a decision and then I move forward again. You know, I'm at one of those, for me personally, I'm at one of those points. And, so I know there's going to be a moving out of it because I'm constantly thinking, working, you know, trying to move forward. But I feel like I'm spinning my wheels a lot lately.
My dad said something about decisions that stuck with me. And it said, you should never have to make a decision. The facts should stand for themselves. If you don't
give me some more color on that.
If you're having to make a decision, you don't have enough facts.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. You know,
the answer should be obvious. It's like firing somebody, right? You've got the answer. You just are procrastinating the decision. Most of the time when I had to fire somebody had to fire somebody, they'd call me for advice and all this. And then they'd do it and I'd say, so do you feel like you did it on time? No, they said every time they'd say, nope, I was like 6 months later than I should have, or a year later, or 6 weeks later, but it was never, I feel really bad. I think I might have made the wrong decision. No, it was never that. It was always, I should have done it sooner. And those are some of the hardest things we do, but we procrastinate. We don't see it. We don't want to see it. We, you know, we dilly-dally around about it. And, you know that is. Same thing with hiring. If it's not obvious that they are going to be a winner, then don't hire them. Keep hunting. We used to do assessments on people, quick assessments. We had these career evenings. And we'd come in and we'd do an interview. Like a 5-minute interview.
Oh yeah, I've been through that. I've been on the receiving end of it. Yeah.
Right. And we put a 1, a 2, a 3, or a 5. And the 1 was obvious. They were perfect. We wanted more. We wanted to know more, right? Mm-hmm. This is a winner. We gotta get another interview with him. We don't want to let him out of the building, basically. Right? Mm-hmm. The 3 was, you know, not very good, but not terrible. A 5 was a 1, but we weren't sure about them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
A 1.
Compliance. Maybe a judgment issue. hadn't always made the right decisions, and you know, might be a bit of an issue. And I kind of liked the fives because I always felt like, well, I could tame wild horses. I couldn't take a mule and turn him into a thoroughbred.
Yeah, I understand.
So I was more risk. I'm a risk taker myself. You know, I like fast cars and fast speeds and airplanes and everything. I had that genetic thing. But I never, I don't, and I had to hire people that were, had issues in their past. Mm-hmm. But I felt like under my tutelage, they would grow and bloom and do great. And I would say for the most part, I was right, but occasionally I made a mistake. But you know what? It was worth it. Because mm-hmm. the stars that I found were, you know, terrific. Mm. So it was, you know, one of those things. Interesting, huh?
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah. I was very good at finding talent. If there was anything that I could, I didn't do everything right, but finding talent, I was really good at. Mm. And then I would pursue them until I got them. Because I knew when I saw talent, that's what drives me crazy about the world I live in now. When I have a superstar intern that as a junior in college, you'd hire him in a flash and he's black. Mm-hmm. He's just the most poised. He's a pitcher at Norfolk State, 95 mile an hour fastball, super poised, super terrific young man. And Merrill Lynch had a hiring freeze, so they wouldn't take him for his second summer. The team wanted him and wanted to hire him when he came out of college. It was all done. And they wouldn't hire him for the intern because they had a hiring freeze on. That's like saying we're not going to participate in this year's draft of baseball players because we don't have any money.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the stock is $28 instead of $60. Mm-hmm. Because they don't have anybody with any idea of how to do this game that's running the show. It's just pathetic. So I digress, but.
No, that's important.
It's important. It's important that when you see talent, you grab it. You know, you got a great situation, you know, helping these guys to fix their businesses and buy them out and eventually have them retire. It's a great business. And you get it and you see it and you got to be patient with it and work through it. But, you can't do that with everybody because there are people that you don't even want to spend time with. But when you get somebody that's nice and courteous and a gentleman and like you have, then that's super, super part of your business. You know, it's a lot easier than one at a time.
Yeah. And it definitely is. You know,
Is that working out?
Yeah, I mean, it is, you know, Kathleen, I don't know if you know, Kathleen went back to Kentucky.
Yep.
She's pregnant and, so she's got a good team relationship and I've started to work with her on some relationships, you know, so, her and I are still close, but she's not here. Johnny, it's been good. I've continued to hand him relationships and he's developed them and has done a really nice job. He has done a fantastic job. I will say that he's been great. He's sometimes he can be overwhelmingly committed, you know, because it's like, okay, you got to slow down a little bit or I'm going to, you know, I want you to be part of this relationship, but you've got to go at a measured pace because the client will get, will be overwhelmed. But he's been fantastic and he really does get into, I've seen several of the clients. He's just become a critical advisor for them, you know, and they can't make a decision without him. And I love that aspect. And then, Dennis trying to get him to do things. He's been progressing. He's saying no to a pretty fair amount of, you know, new relationships, and the ones that he can't say no to, he started using Johnny as well. So set up a joint number with him. So he's also funneling, clients that he either doesn't have time for or just doesn't see a long-term relationship with. So that's been good. We've got that. And then I will say from a managerial, I need to, you know, give myself some credit from time to time, but we've had a difficult time with, got an advisor here in the office, 44 years in the business, and we've just gotten him to, he's on the verge. It's just a technicality, but, to commit to joining a team here in the office. And that's going to be big. And one of the things that's holding him back a little bit is he wants me to be part of the team also. Yeah. Isn't that weird? But, I mean, I've just told him that I have to step away from that part of it. Right now we just need to focus on what's best for him and his clients. You know, and it can't be anything that has to do with me or anybody else, you know, from that standpoint, just needs to be, cause everything will come out in the wash, you know, in the end, you know, where like it needs to be.
He trusts you more than he trusts the team.
He does. He brought me this wonderful bottle of bourbon on Monday. This is his 44th anniversary. And I, you know, I was recognizing him and things like that. And then he came in and brought me a bottle of bourbon, and I was just, it's pretty moving, you know, guy, 44 years in the business.
How old is he?
Hudson is 72 now.
Yeah.
Me too. But he's been with our firm for 44 years. And then he was in the insurance business before this.
So he's probably got 50 years then.
Yeah. About 50 years total in the business. And he was on the, he was telling me the, you know, he's on the $1 million round table, and I was asking him things like, well, how did you know you wanted to be in the securities business? You know, and he said, well, not everybody wants to talk about insurance. He said, most everybody with money wants to talk about stocks, you know, and, he just has always loved that aspect of it. So anyway, it's made us closer, and, so that's been good. I feel like we are making progress in that standpoint. We've got some real critical issues that I've been a key participant in. So that's felt good, you know, to be able to do that.
That's great.
Yeah. I mean, so there are little things. So they're just little things. I don't know if there's more distractions. I just don't feel like I'm not executing as me too, but I'm just not executing as much as I feel like I could be or should be, you know? But I say that, and we're opening new relationships, converting relationships. I mean, it's going on every day. It's just, I'd probably need to just sit down and list them all out. And so I can remember exactly what we're doing, so I can not go home. I don't know if my memory, maybe I'm losing my memory. Can't remember it all. So the numbers are good, that all that's going good. I just, I'm just at a,
when you say you need me more than ever, what does that mean?
There's nobody else I can talk to like this.
Yeah, I know. It's ridiculous, but it's true, right?
Yeah.
As a manager, you can't.
Yeah.
You don't want to talk to your boss and show any weakness. You don't want to talk to the FAs and show any weakness or, so you really, I know, I lived there for years and years and years, and there was nobody. And, you know, maybe a buddy you know, but then you didn't even know then whether you could trust, you know. It's just weird.
Well, my feeling is that, you know, even a few months from now, and I'll say, Rob, listen, I've gotten this is going well. And then you'll have perspective on where, and you can say, hey, well, I remember where you were 3 months ago. This right. This is good progress. And you can kind of recognize that, you know, I think those are important. That's important.
You know, one of the things I've learned, which is really weird, is that sometimes you don't need to press as much as you think you do. I was always in a hurry, super hurry for everything. And then I started this and I was like, you know, I don't want to go too fast. You know, I want to keep my golf and my this and my fly fishing. And
right.
So it was a completely different mentality, right? What happened was stuff just happened.
It just keeps coming in, right? And
it's just sort of, I'm busier than I really want to be.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not making much money, but it, you know, I don't care. It's private world out there. Once you get out of this business you're in, you'll find out it's hard to make money outside of this business. Mm-hmm. People, your clients that are making money and running little shops and doing this and that, it's hard work.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't worry, cause I don't care. I do about my brand and my legacy and all that. I care about that, but I don't care about me personally. What I'm making at the end of the year doesn't matter, except I get to give more away. Mm-hmm. Okay. But what I'm saying is that things just happen, you know. I had all these issues with the insurance on our house, right? My boat. They were fighting me. Well, I just got a check for $70,000 from the insurance company, then another $170,000. So it's going to come true. You know, I'm going to get like $300,000 and $350,000 from the insurance company. I just wouldn't tolerate, you know, them basically trying to rip me off. So I hired an assessor or a guy that does this, and he did a great job. And I just had to be patient enough and spend the money myself to fix up the house. And now the money's coming in. And just as weird as it is, it's just like the boat. I thought my boat, you know, do I just get rid of it? It's wrecked. And
what happened? I'm not sure I know what happened, Rob.
This is all the hurricane down in Florida.
Oh, okay.
But that's good. You don't know, because just think about it, right? I'm right in the middle of the hurricane. Basically lost most of my house in Florida and my boat. So it's like, but did I care? Did I tell you? No, I don't spend time worrying about stuff.
Yeah.
But anyway, so the house thing is gonna come together. And I said no to what they offered on the boat and kept giving them more information. And they offered me like $7,000, and I'm going to get 38,000. So, you know, just kind of like stick to your guns, be patient,
mm-hmm.
put it in that pile over there and just move on, feed it every now and then, but don't worry about it. Other people go crazy worrying about it. I said, you can't do anything about it. Don't worry about it. Put it in, lock it up, set it over there and let it ferment, feed it. You know, and then most of the time it comes to what you want. You know, it's just, it's very weird. That's sort of the way this whole thing has been for me, which I would never been that way before. I'd have been pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing. I'd probably won, but it would have cost me in aggravation and anxiety and all the rest.
Well, let me give you and I know why. I guess you mentioned this thing to me, but I'm going to mention something to you. This one has gotten me. This one's just really gotten me.
Good. Okay. It's a good one.
Yeah, I mean, it's totally not business stuff. So
yeah, that's a good one.
So my son, my youngest son, right, yep. Who is he is killing it right now in the social media world. It's unbelievable. So he made probably 3 months ago, he made north of $20,000 for the month. The month after that, he made somewhere around $35,000 for the month. And now he'll probably make $50,000 this month. Okay. So he's got this geometric progression right now in what he's doing. He hasn't paid a cent in taxes now. I got to tell you that up front, which driving me crazy, but he has not paid taxes. But really, literally, it's been the last few months that all of a sudden he's just, everything's really coming together.
Yeah, he was making 10 grand before and now it's
just multiple.
Real money. Yeah.
So last year, before he went back to school, he was having problems with his car.
Yeah.
So we went out to, and our mechanic is a friend of ours. And he said, look, Derek, y'all have had some issues with this Jeep because I would suggest before it gets too bad, just go trade it, go get something else. And cause he's going to be going off to Houston, send him off with at least a car. So we go out and he finds this little sports car that he wants. So it's a great little car. I mean, it's a great car and it's only 20,000 miles on it. And we were not going to really participate in that, but he spent like 2 days, I think, down, you know, just in this, you know, this place's office trying to work on getting more money from his trade, taking money from less money. Finally, I feel like they just gave up and gave him the
right. He just needed to beat him to death.
Take it, get the hell
what
out of here.
What kind of a car was it?
It was called a Toyota 86.
Okay.
It's a little BRZ. It's one of those things that you'd see.
Yeah, but a Toyota's a reliable car. Not a lot of car around him to protect him, but.
Right. It's a reliable car and it's also a Subaru and things like that.
Yep.
All right. So he has not changed his oil since we bought the car. Okay. Back in August, he's taken it in 4 times for service for a check engine light. And they just read the code and they do whatever. They're supposed to do this multi-point inspection that they put on there or whatever. And yeah. So they have not been doing that. So, and he drives the car too hard and has driven the car too hard. And so somewhere in between this last service, he goes in there. They have the car for a week and a half. He drives it out, finally gets it back for after a week and a half. Within 24 hours, the engine fails.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, the engine fails. And he brings it back, limps it into the dealership. And they say, well, this is your fault, you know, basically. And at first they thought there was no oil in it. Turns out there was some oil. We got the general manager finally involved and he gets this, their top mechanic. And I don't know who to believe, but so they've got records where they show the car leaving the dealership with so many miles on it. And then him returning the car with 300 more miles on it. Well, according to my son, he's saying, Dad, all I did, I went to the grocery store, I went to this and that. He goes, no way in hell I drove 300 miles on this thing. I was like, okay, well, I don't know who to believe or whatever. Right. So I'm talking to he's essentially like my father-in-law, right? So they're not married, but they've been together for 30 years and he used to be in the car business. And he said, okay, I am sure that he has just driven the hell out of the car, didn't service it. You know, he said, so if the dealership will not fix it or whatever, you know, and you can't reach an agreement, then trade the car and just have him finance the rest of it, put it on him, and he's going to have to learn to take care of the car, which is ultimately what we ended up doing. And I said, well, look, you got to, you know, you're going to have to pony up for this one. And, you know, didn't teach him anything. But anyway, so it goes to the dealership. So he has some money in his account now. So he goes out and essentially says, well, I'm going to give you the car, which he paid like $30,000 for it last year. They're going to give him around $10,000 or $11,000. It's $10,500, whatever. He writes a check for $30,000. So it's enough to drive me crazy, bro. Anyway, he's got a $70,000 car that he's driving off in. Well, he hasn't taken care of the first car or the second car or the third car that he's had. So now he's into this thing and I've got to send paperwork back in because the deal was I was going to co-sign on a loan with him. Anyway, so now I was at the point of ready to sue the dealership, you know, cause we've got a friend that works upstairs and he's like, listen, I think that they, you know, we found out some more facts on the car, which leads me to believe that Matthew abused the car, you know, that just, he just abused it. So I'm at this point where I'm just, in theory, it's not going to cost me anything else, you know, and I guess that's the way I should maybe leave it. And so I think my son screwed up. I think the dealership screwed up. I think we're letting the dealership off the hook too easy. I think that Matthew's getting off too easy. And maybe that's the way it's supposed to be, is that this, and I feel like I've just invested too much emotional capital in this thing, trying to help figure it all out. And in the end, I'm still going to be a co-signer for like $30,000, of this note. And I really have no personal debt except for my house, you know, whatever was left on my mortgage. But anyway, this thing has been driving me crazy. And you know what put me over the edge on this was, he did one of these YouTube videos or whatever where he's, you know, he's all bragging about his new car, you know, and all this bullshit. But then he's talking about that he's going to modify it and soup it up and do all these things to him. Like, you just bought a $70,000 car. What are you really going to do?
What kind of car is it?
It's a BMW M4.
Nice.
You know what an M4 is?
Hey, of course I do.
I have no idea what an M4 is.
Yeah, yeah. I had various versions of the, I had a 750 SL750 with a sport package, and it was a great car. So I covet the M series. There's a series in the Mercedes of handmade cars, and that's what the M series is. It's very fast.
Very fast, very powerful. So anyway,
okay. So what you're doing is you need to be more of a grandfather and less of a father.
Okay.
Okay. And you need to stop worrying about things that you can't do anything about. Okay. And you got to let him learn these life lessons, like paying taxes. That's something to worry about. Mm-hmm. You don't want him. Hunter Biden didn't go to jail, but your son will. Mm-hmm. Okay. All the things you said to worry about, that's the only one I heard.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you got to get him a CPA that will make him pay quarterly taxes.
Yeah. And that's where we've left it right there. So.
Do you have it? Do you have the CPA? Do you have?
Oh yeah, we've got it. And he's rejected our CPA, saying that he's got one there in Houston.
Which is fine.
We don't care. You know, we're like, go to him, but just let us know when you've gone to him. And
that would be the, in signing the note, co-signing the note, I would require him to send you a copy of his quarterly payments.
That's a good idea.
And just look him straight in the eye and say, look, the rest of it's just been money. Now we're talking about the law. And you're not Hunter Biden. You'll go to jail.
Yeah. All right. That's good. Yeah, because I can't bail him out on that stuff. I
mean, no, you cannot. He makes bad decisions. He owns it. He's the one going to jail, not you.
Yeah. And the money has just started coming in so fast. It's unbelievable.
Well, then he's just got to pay taxes fast.
Yeah, that's right. All right. Well, that's a good idea. So you're actually okay with the other car.
I don't care about the other car.
You don't care about that part. It's the other part keeps yourself in trouble.
He's going to make lots of dumb decisions until his brain matures at 21, if that. Okay, so his judgment is always going to be bad until he's 21. But you just don't want the judgment ending up costing him his brand, his reputation. Going to jail is not great for your social media.
You're right. No. Okay, Rob. Well, thank you. That was good. That was great.
Yeah, you can't do anything about stupid small decisions. Just make sure you know, the big ones you're paying attention to.
Mm-hmm.
That's the key. You can't, my son came to me when he was, 20. He'd spent a couple of years in college and I got word that he was going to leave college and go to California. So I flew down there with my wife and we sat in the restaurant and he said, "Dad, you've done a good job. I'm mature. This is what I want to do. College is not, I'm just not motivated at this time. And I've got a job out there and I'm going to be fine." I was like, "Kid sounds like he knows what he's doing." Okay, that was a bad decision on my part. Okay. Because he wasn't mature. It was a really bad decision. And he got himself in jail.
Really?
Yeah. Not anything long term, just an overnight. "Dad, can you send me a check to bail me out of jail because I burned a couch and, you know, they got me and I was, what were you doing? Well, I was sleeping on couches and, you know, in this college out here, I wasn't going to the college, but I was hanging around with them and working, you know, in restaurants and things." It was a bum. Okay. So we got him and we brought him home and he went back to college and look, he's been a handful. Okay. But had I to do it over with, I would have kept him on a tighter leash.
Yeah. You know, it's weird. We had this, I was talking to, it was a client of mine who's also a therapist, right? And so, we were talking today about this at lunch. I took him to lunch and, he asked me why I let certain things happen. Right. And I told him, and I believe this, and I'm going to question myself because I've said it, you know, now. So I'm on record of saying it, but every risk that I wanted to take as I was growing up, my father always tried to steer me away from taking any risks at all, you know, and a few of those risks that I took ended up being the greatest decisions of my life. You know, they shaped me who I am.
Sure.
And so there's that fine line of wanting to be supportive and being over, you know, I know exactly the way you feel because I would have made it. You know, you have to sit there and think about that when you're, well, it sounds like he's got it pretty much under control. So you want to have faith. You want to give him the keys to the thing. Go, yep, go for it then. Make it work. Anyway.
Look at your watch. He's 18. He's 20. His brain isn't formed.
Yeah, I know. He's formed in the next two months. So it'll be 21 next month.
Still, I'm telling you, some of these kids take till they're 25.
Yeah, I know.
The point is that they appear as if they have their shit together.
Yeah.
And they don't.
No, he does not. All right. Well, I hope I didn't make you late for another call, but I can't tell you how much I appreciate you.
I'm good. I enjoy these, as you know, and I want to be of value to you.
You definitely are.
But we never know where these are going to go, do we?
Yeah, some days, but I did get, I've got some things, some notes here that are important.
I think that this is a good one. And can I tell you, where I went wrong and why, what I could, I don't know. It's just, it's a series of decisions that, and you're always there. You're always supportive. You're always going to be the safety net to bail them out. But like you said, you got to give them the rope to hang himself, but just don't let him hang himself.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Right. So let him do his social media thing. Maybe this is going to be his career and he'll make millions. So you can't say as an artist, you suck. You got to say you're a beautiful artist. I love what you're doing. Just understand that at this point, you don't have all the answers. Mm-hmm. And you may not see that bullet that's got your name on it, like the IRS.
Yes.
But I do. Name on it. I do. We're talking serious business here.
And the time to take care of it is going to be now.
Now, not when he has no cash because he spent it all.
Right.
And he's going to come to you for a loan.
Then it's not going to happen. It can't.
Right. See, so that's what you gotta say. Look, you gotta put 25% of this away for taxes. He's got what taxes? That's that guy that marched down the parade on the 4th of July called Uncle Sam.
Mm-hmm.
Put his hand up. No matter what you do, he's got his hand up. Okay. He's going to be a partner for the rest of your life. And all these liberal causes, you got to pay for them.
Well, this will be our next follow-up call, right? We'll devote 5 minutes to me giving you an update on what happened next.
Well, you did really well with Johnny. You handled that well. It was crazy for a while, and now everything seems to have calmed down. And the key is to not major in the minors.
Yeah.
Let all the small stuff go, and it's all small stuff. Concentrate on the big ones. The health and the risk, the big risks. And you're never going to protect them completely, but you can give them good advice.
Yeah, I'm about to go pick up my wife, and I'm sure we're going to do a little conference call with him on our way to where we're going. So.
Yeah, and you got to figure if he's 30, 40, 50, the next one is 60, 70, 80.
Oh, I know. It's just going to get bigger, 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 potentially.
Yeah. I mean, then maybe the bubble bursts. But until then, he's got to act like this is real.
Yeah, I know. I hear you. I just want him to hear me, too.
And he's got to concentrate on school, because if he's going to be a rich person, he's got to have a good education. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
So maybe you're the dad, what's her name? The singer whose father worked at Merrill Lynch in Nashville, Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
Yeah. She makes like $700 million a concert or some crazy thing.
Lord,
maybe that's way too much, but it's some crazy number. And her dad is a financial advisor at Merrill Lynch and manages her money. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Billions. She's got billions now.
Billions of dollars. Yeah.
So maybe you'll be the financial.
I hope so. From your lips to God's ears. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a new world. We don't know.
It's a new world. You're right.
All right.
Bye, my friend.
Yeah.
Okay. Bye. Thanks, Rob. Bye.
Welcome.